This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Tech Talk and I'm Jeff Sandhu. This is a DNA special today because last week we did a show with Karamjit Singh on his top 5. He actually wanted to do a top 15, but we don't have time for Karamjit to do a top 15. This week we have Edwin Yap from DNA and he will be doing a top 5 articles that he's written on the digitalnewsasia.com.
That's right, Jeff, just only 5 for me.
Only 5 for you. Now, the first one is interesting. You picked on the social media part where during the elections. Your title was a spotlight trained on Malaysia's social media election. What's this story? Just refresh all about.
Well, as you know, the general elections took place in May this year. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think it's something that I wrote about in more of a commentary piece on how social media impacts the election. And I think this is the top story for me this year because it is indeed an impactful story. A couple of years ago, I did write this for my ZDNet blog, and in which I examined whether social media can actually make impacts in elections. I alluded to Malcolm Gladwell's article, and in which he argued that social media may not be really something that can actually impact elections. In the sense that a lot of people are just armchair critics. That's his part of his argument. Mm. I concluded then that I didn't know. I was open to it. But 2 years later, I think differently. I think that at the very least, social media is definitely galvanizing more people to be more aware and actually encouraging or, being an inspiration for people to act and participate in civil society issues. And also, another thing that I brought up in the article is that it debunks mainstream media, one-sided media, perhaps by government or state-owned media that is only telling one side of the story. So the article, I went on to argue that, there are three reasons for this. That number one, Malaysia has higher broadband penetration today compared to 2 years ago or indeed 5 years ago when we had the last election. Number two, people are just more aware today. They are clamoring for more information. They are clamoring for balanced information. Lastly, we are indeed a young nation. I think about 3 million new voters were eligible to vote this time around. And we are told that, contrary to popular belief, that actually our nation's average age is, around 26, 27. And a lot of these people are Gen Ys. And as you know, Gen Ys are fully immersed in social media.
Mm. Well, it's interesting because, even in the States, social media is a big part during their elections as
yes,
well.
Yes, that's yeah. correct. We always think that we are behind the Western states, but, with the internet being what it is, it's no longer true. A lot of things that the West experience, we can too experience. I ended up, though, with the article with a caveat, though. Not everything on social media is true. So it is important to separate fact from fiction. But what we do have today that is great is that we have more data, more information than we did before. But the onus is still on us to be, like a journalist, wear a skeptical hat, question, find out, verify, corroborate before we, do things with this information. I think that's important. Some of the things that came out on both sides of the aisle, I would say political divide, perhaps were not true. And, a lot of people act on it. So social media is a double-edged sword. So this is where I ended the story.
Mm. And who knows what will happen in the next 4 to 5 years.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
Now, second story that you picked is P1 of them laying nearly 100 workers to streamline operations. Why did you pick this story?
Well, it was kind of like a scoop. All credit due to PC.com, a local magazine who broke the news first. But as they say, the devil is in the details. Mm-hmm. Although they broke the story first, their story, with all due respect to them, lacked certain elements. And we began digging around some industry sources and we found out that the number was close to 100 people. And the reasons cited was basically outsourcing part of their operation to a vendor in the form of a managed service. Now, P1 generally, I think, is no secret, is not doing that well in the market. There are rumors that they are up for sale. Mm-hmm. The rumors are still around. subscriber numbers have kind of like, you know, plateaued out. And you notice there aren't any aggressive marketing campaigns, not even on BFM like it did before, or on the TV, or even in billboards or the print ads. So nothing much is happening here. From what I understand, they are trying to, you know, perhaps make a sale. Perhaps likely valuation is an issue, or which part of the business is to sell. So I think, in fact, their building has also, I understand, been sold off. I think The Edge had the news on that. So I think what is important to note here is that, quite apart from whether or not their P&L is doing well or not, more importantly for me is the technology WiMAX. And I think this is where their Achilles heel is. Really, WiMAX has no future roadmap. You know, guys that are in the region who have done WiMAX, they have not accelerated their subscriber base. For example, Globe Telecom in Philippines have tried. There's another one called First Media and Berka in Indonesia. They have not done well. P1, YTL, you know, YTL doesn't really tell us much about their subscriber base. But then they have a big company in terms of YTL Group backing them. So I think this is where P1 is struggling with, you know, what is next for them. And if in technology, if you have know what is next, then people become very antsy about whether they want to go with you and whether or not they are going to actually invest in you, so to speak.
Mm.
So there is an option, of course, for the WiMAX players to go to this technology called TD-LTE. I don't have time to explain this, but if you go onto DNA and do a search, you'll be able to read some stories I've written about it. But this would take investment. So investment, it's a catch-22, you see. So if they don't have the capital expenditure, the power to ramp up, then they won't be able to just go onto TD-LTE. So it's kind of a, you know, chicken and egg situation. So I do wish them well, but I think their subscriber base seem to have plateaued off, and it doesn't seem to be moving much.
This story kind of leads nicely to one of your stories that you will have later in the show. Talks about evolving, so it's, you know, it's a story of how companies should evolve as well.
Yes.
We'll come back with another three more of your top five picks for 2013. I'm here with Edwin Yap from DNA. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9. This is Tech Talk, and I'm Jeff Sandhu. I'm here with Edwin Yap from Digital News Asia, and we are going through roundups of Edwin's top five of 2013. Early on, we spoke about the social media elections, during the elections, and then also a P1, the story on P1 laying off 100 workers to streamline operations. Moving on to number three on your list, Malaysia ICT salaries trail the Southeast Asia region again.
Yeah, this is the second time the PCOM survey is done in conjunction with KPMG, mm-hmm. the consulting and accounting firm, plus JobStreet, based on some data from JobStreet. And what's interesting is that this particular year, it seems that Vietnam is starting to pay a lot higher than even countries like Singapore, Malaysia definitely, and some of the other countries in the region. And obviously, what's happening there? And according to PCOM, who did this survey, they believe that a lot of ramping up is going on in Vietnam, much like how Malaysia went through this in the 90s. A lot of software action out there, and as a result of that, there's been a lot of expatriate community, people with expertise coming in, and naturally when you have expatriates, the salary pay there will be higher. But overall, I would say that the ICT scene here in Malaysia itself is still attractive, although due to things like globalization and cross-border activities, you really can't stop this trend of being paid higher in another country.
Mm.
So to be fair to Malaysia, I think it's sapping our talent, not only just Malaysia, Singapore are also losing their people. So it's happening everywhere. So I think the other key point to note from this story is that fewer people are taking computer science ICT course compared to 10, 15 years ago. And that's one of the things that came out. And apparently, there's been a lack of interest somehow. Perhaps ICT isn't as glamorous.
Doesn't sound sexy. Yeah,
glamorous as it used to be. perhaps parents are more, you know, they are more diversified now, besides the big four of accountancy, lawyer, and engineer, and doctor. I suppose there are a lot more options today. But I think the ICT scene in Malaysia is still vibrant, although there have been that general feel that our students, our education system is still very rote and we still lack critical thinking skills in our graduates in general. The top of the cream of the crop, the top guys, they are okay, they can find the best jobs. The majority, perhaps not so.
Just some stats here. Well, the ICT jobs in Singapore are paid 1.84 times better than in Malaysia.
Yeah.
In Thailand, it's 1.6 times better. In Vietnam, it's 1.87 times better. The only two countries which is paid lower is the Philippines and Indonesia. And I think it's only a matter of time before they as well, you know, catch up to speed and be as on par as us, since they are a developing nation as well.
Perhaps so, but I think that's where Malaysia as an industry needs to address this. PCOM is trying to do their part by trying to take on some national issues, but it's not just them that need to get into the act. I think this whole thing goes back to a very fundamental national issue about our education system, our entire approach to education, our thinking. And as you know, this is a very tawny subject, you know, whether science and maths is supposed to be taught in English or on the mother tongue. And there's an ongoing issue about vernacular schools and its place in the system, you know. So it's a complex problem, but it's something that the country must look at, I feel.
Now, fourth on your list is something that I think we will be still talking about come 2014.
Yes.
Will LTE rescue mobile operators?
Well, it you know, for a long time, what the operators did in the past when a new technology came out, especially the wireless technology, not so much things like fiber, is that they used to sound the trumpet, blow the horns, have million-dollar campaigns about this. It certainly was the case for 3G. A lot of the operators were, in fact, all the operators were guilty of this. But what I've noticed this year, since LTE was the licenses have been awarded by MCMC, the industry regulator, early this year in January, is that a lot, if not most of the operators have not blown their trumpet as loudly as before. And I think this is a good thing. I wrote a commentary on this, that muted LTE campaigns is actually good for the industry, simply because it is no point talking about LTE and what it means to a user when the network is not even rolled out yet, you know. So it's much better to talk about the value of what you get from LTE. And I think, to be fair to them, this time they got it right finally. Don't blow the trumpet or put the cart before the horse. But I think that doesn't necessarily mean that LTE will save operators, because I think operators today, no matter which one you talk to, are still struggling with the decline of voice and SMS. I mean, Jeff, when's the last time you really spoke on your phone instead of WhatsApping, WeChatting, and lining?
It's been a very long time.
And unless you're talking to maybe the more senior set in your phone book list, you'll be SMSing.
You know, remember, but even with my mom, she's migrated to an iPhone now and she loves WhatsApp because it's, again, free.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of free. Yeah. I mean, you pay a flat rate for it. So these are things called what we call as over the top. And operators have been very resistant to them because basically they're saying it's unfair, right? They are saying that, you know, hey, you guys use the traffic over our network and, you know, we don't get to charge premium or, you know, per use basis. You know, you get a flat all you can eat buffet type kind of a situation. But I think OTT or over the top players are here to stay, whether it's WhatsApp, Facebook, or all the other guys. I think to survive, operators have no choice. They just have to innovate. They have to get out of this thing called the dumb pipe mentality and add value to the networks. In the sense that, you know, operators are not just pipe providers anymore. They just don't sell bandwidth. If you're going to do that, you probably won't survive for long. You're going to have to add value. You have to give your end users, guys like you and me and the rest of the public, something that they want to use as part of your network. And I think some guys have partnered OTT players. I think Digi and WhatsApp have worked out something together where they can offer certain services on top of their network. So don't see them as a foe rather than see them as a friend. So it is innovation must come out before LTE will really make a difference in this country. That's why I think. And, you know, coverage is still very sparse at best. But 2014, they're going to ramp up. So we'll look forward to it. I mean, there's also an issue with devices. There are many devices coming out with LTE bands. So I'm looking forward to the new Samsung range and the new HTC range and the rest.
Yeah, I'm sure this won't be the end of the conversation on for LTE. Moving on to the last of your pick, CIOs who don't evolve in the cloud era will be replaced. This is a very serious piece.
Yeah, this story was written just a couple of months ago during the MSE Cloud Conference as part of the GES Week, Global Entrepreneur Summit, I believe. The CIOs basically must learn to speak the language of board members and the other C-levels, because IT is no longer about keeping the lights on or operational in nature. It's not about servers, racks, it's not about virtualization, it's not about cloud. It's really about being strategic, and they need to talk. They need to shed the techno terms, because C-level board members, they are technologically in that sense illiterate. I think most of them are. They want to talk about business value. What's in it for me if I invest in this? What is the cloud to me? What about security? What about privacy? Things like this. So the CIO, if they want the year off the C-level and the board levels, they must change their way of speaking. So it's not just speaking, but it's an entire bringing of new strategy to board level. So it's not about how much energy you consume and how many servers you use. So the thing about it, I found very interesting about this story, is that there was one CIO on stage who clearly said, the CIO of Bumi Amada, and he came out very clearly in no uncertain terms. He said that those who cannot hack this, those cannot make this transition, perhaps they should make way for those who can. And those that are already doing it, they are not doing it well enough. They have to do a better job of selling themselves in front of the board, which means they have to be more multidisciplinary, and they just can't talk tech any longer. They need to know about a lot more things. And Gartner has coined this term called the chief digital officer. Yep. Perhaps it may be called that one day, but certainly it's no longer about the lights on. And I think this story, you know, rounds up very nicely the enterprise coverage that we have for the year, that it is a changing role of the CIO, and, you know, those who must want to succeed must really evolve.
And this discussion has already been going on. A lot of CIOs are already, you know, having discussion with their CMOs, because marketing is a very,
right.
very big.
So if you go on to DNA, you will also see some other stories. CMO could be the CIO's best friend too. So that's some of the enterprise coverage we have done over the year. And this rounds up very nicely the year.
All right. Thank you very much, Edwin Yap, from digitalnewsasia.com. This has been the top five from Edwin. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.